My closest friend, a homicide lieutenant, refuses to add up how many murders he's investigated, claiming nostalgia is for losers. My rough guess is 300. Most of those have been a sickening mix of tragic and mundane. A pair of drunks pounding the life out of each other while equally besotted witnesses stand around hooting. An errant knife flick or gunshot putting the period on a domestic spat. Gangbangers, some of them too young to shave, wielding firearms ranging from explode-in-your-hand 22s to military-grade assault weapons as they blast away through the open windows of scruffy, compact cars. It's the different ones that bring Milo Sturgis to my door. Catherine Hennepin's homicide easily qualified, but he'd never mentioned her to me. Now he stood in my living room at 9 a.m. wearing a dust-colored windbreaker and brown poly pants from another era, his olive vinyl attaché dangling from one massive paw. Pale, pockmarked, paunchy, black hair limp and in need of trimming, he sagged like a rhino who'd lost out to the alpha male. "Doctor," he grumbled. He uses my title when amused or depressed. That covers a lot of ground. I said, "Morning."
"Apparently it is."
He trudged past me into the kitchen and sank into a chair, avoiding eye contact while unlatching the green case. Out came a blue binder, identical to so many others I'd seen. Hennepin, KB, had been opened 2 months ago.
"Yeah, yeah," he said, still looking away. "Didn't think I needed to bug you, 'cause it was obvious," he growled. "Don't take any stock tips from me."
He waited. I read. Catherine Bell Hennepin, 33, a bookkeeper at a mom-and-pop accounting firm in Sherman Oaks, had been found in the bedroom of her West L.A. apartment, strangled and stabbed. The blow-up of her driver's license photo portrayed a thin-faced, fine-featured woman with shoulder-length light brown hair, a sweet smile, and freckles that managed to assert themselves with the DMV camera. Sad eyes, I thought, but maybe I was already biased. I knew why Milo had included the shot, wanting me to think of her as a person, wanting to remind himself. Rosiness and pinpoint blood dots around the ligature mark, but far less pooling and cast-off and splotches than you'd expect with 36 stab wounds, suggested the killer had choked first, slashed second. A few blood drops and a tamped-down section of carpeting indicated the murder had begun in the hallway just outside the kitchen, after which Catherine Hennepin had been dragged to her bedroom. The killer then positioned her atop her twin mattress, lying face up, head propped on a pillow. She was found covered, head to toe, with a blanket taken from her linen closet. The pose the killer had chosen, arms pressed to her sides, legs close together, suggested peaceful repose, if you didn't consider the gore. No obvious sexual positioning, and the autopsy confirmed no sexual assault. Milo and Detective 1 Sean Binchy had gone over the apartment with customary thoroughness and found no evidence of burglary. An empty slot in a knife block in the kitchen fit the heaviest butcher blade in the set. The dimensions of that high-quality German utensil synced with the coroner's description of the murder weapon. A careful search of Catherine Hennepin's apartment and nearby garbage bins failed to turn up the knife. The same disappointing result followed a canvas of the quiet, middle-class neighborhood where the victim had paid rent for 2 years. No fingerprints or blood were lifted that couldn't be traced to Catherine Hennepin. The lack of foreign blood was another letdown. Knife murderers, particularly those engaging in overkill, often lose their grips on blood-slicked hafts and cut themselves. Despite the apparent frenzy of this attack, there'd been no slip. I turned the page to a new set of photos. In the dinette off the kitchen, the table was set with dinner for two.